It's 9 minutes past two and it's time for our cookery feature. A Spanish cookbook from 1745 by a Spanish friar has been translated and is now on sale. To tell us about New Art of Cookery, a Spanish Friar's Kitchen Notebook, welcome Vicky Haywood. Thanks for joining us, Vicky.
Thank you, Selena, for inviting me to talk to you.
And you're actually living in Spain as well.
Yes, I live in Madrid.
And, in Madrid.
I've been here for 27 years now.
So this was an influential recipe book originally published by Juan Altamiras. Who was he?
Juan Altamiras was an Aragonese friar. He was born in southern Aragon on the plains, and he became a lay friar rather than a religious one. And he was put into kitchen work without his choice and found himself a little bit lost, decided that as soon as he knew enough about the work, he would write a cookbook for other people who found themselves in the same position.
How interesting. And we've described him now as a Franciscan friar. What does that mean?
Well, the friars are mendicants. They're a different kind of religious order from the monastic orders that we hear more about, like the Benedictines and Cistercians in relation to food, who contributed so much to winemaking. The mendicants depended on alms, or the food that was given to them, as a gesture of voluntary poverty. And therefore, this really shaped Juan Altamiras' cookery.
It's interesting because not only is it a cookery book that you've obviously translated, but it's a history book too, and it helps us to understand more about food and culture in the 18th century.
Yes, I felt at the beginning when I began to translate it, I thought this was going to be a fairly short project, but I found that to translate it well, I really had to cook the recipes. Yes, then I began to note the ones that I thought worked best, and in the end, as I served them to friends for supper, and they wanted more, I decided to cook my way through the book. And as I was doing that, and I was researching the background to each recipe, I realized that it was a sort of taking us and the reader right into everyday life in a sort of fascinating way that's quite difficult unless you're dealing with something like food, because we all eat. Everybody eats. And that's what's so wonderful about this, is that you reach life, everyday life, as it was experienced by millers or poor people queuing up for soup at lunchtime. Absolutely everyone appears.
And has it, obviously times have changed, but the actual food, because you're looking at recipes from the 18th century, has the food changed, or is there a link between sort of the modern Spanish cookery of now?
Oh, absolutely. That's what's really remarkable about the book, and I think it's what drew me to it in the first place, apart from its, because it has an emphasis on our own modern food values. Apart from simplicity, naturally his dependence on alms and produce from the friary kitchen garden means that he's looking at a balance between meat, fish and vegetables that's immediately familiar and quite welcome to us. Because it was a time when really wealthy people ate meat every single day, and vegetables were looked on more or less as weeds, something to be despised. Whereas he gives an unprecedented proportion of vegetable recipes, and they're quite delicious to our own tastes.
Yeah, of course, yeah. It must have been quite good fun researching this. Was it easy, or did it become quite hard?
It was fun. It was extremely slow. I wouldn't say it was hard. It was very patient work because nothing had been done before. There were almost no secondary sources. I had to go back to primary sources, and I had to really work out where they were and how to get into them and do an awful lot of background reading to be able to set the relevant accounts and documents in context.
Yeah, of course. How many recipes are actually in there? Did you translate and test every single one?
More or less every single one, except for one. Everyone asks me that question. Which one did you not dare do? And there's about 210 recipes. In fact, very often, or quite often, each recipe contains two or three variations. And some of those variations are fascinating in their own right. So I'd say around 210. Blimey. But for example, one variation on chickpeas is what we all know in Spain as potaje de cuaresma. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's the first time that somebody suggests you cook chickpeas with salt, cod and greens. Uh-huh. And maybe egg. And so, you know, that's just a little variation. There's a lot to unpack in the book.
Yeah. It sounds fascinating, and it's done so well that it's won the Jane Grigson Trust Award this year.
Yes, that was a great honour for me.
I'm sure. Well done.
Thank you.
Now, you've kindly offered, as all our guests do on the Cookery Feature, to share a recipe with us on air. It's called a wow recipe. Everyone says wow, and it is a lemon granizada. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. So granizada is very familiar to us all, which is why I chose this recipe, because you can see how easy it is to take something that we know today and make it a little bit different, and how much you gain from these historic twists of flavour.
Excellent.
Granizada, I think, is a drink that really can never quite go wrong, because when you have it in people's houses in Valencia, in the countryside, they often just serve it as a block of ice, and it melts, and that's fine. Or you can have it as a very sophisticated, smooth slush, or you can have it almost as a sorbet. So this can be the basis of any of those three. Shall I give you the ingredients?
Yeah, please.
Yeah. So you need two big, juicy, organic or unwaxed lemons, a litre of water. I myself choose to use mineral water. I think it's worth the investment. Or tap water. About 100 grams of cane sugar, and a little more in reserve in case you have a sweet tooth. The cane sugar really makes a huge difference here. It will make your granizada a little bit more brown than white, but it gives a rich sweetness that makes all the difference when it combines with the acidic lemon. So you start the day beforehand, paring off the lemon zest with a potato peeler or similar, making sure that you have absolutely no pith. Then put it in a small container and whiz or blitz it with a hand blender, and you should end up with a pale yellow water. This is easier if you grate it, but I find grating it, you can tend to get some pith involved. So it's better to pare and then chop your strips of zest. Put the water in the fridge and chill overnight. Dissolve your sugar, your cane sugar, in a small panful of the remaining water. Simmer briefly and leave to cool. Combine the sugar syrup and the lemon water, which you take from the fridge, in a non-stick silicone or plastic container, ideally a round one. Squeeze the juice from the two lemons, add it, and then freeze your mixture, drawing the iced fringes into the center every hour or so. This takes about 4 hours, but is really quite variable depending on the strength of your freezer and the depth of your liquid. If it's 3 or 4 inches deep, it will take a long time. And if it's only, an inch deep, you can really get away with an hour and a half or 2 hours. If you're in a hurry, you can use a metal container and break up the ice crystals more often. You should have a smoothish slush, and just before serving, you can also blend the granizada again if you want something that looks almost like a sorbet. I like to also serve this with ice cubes that I make from water, and within which I freeze a mint leaf and a little lemon zest, because it looks absolutely beautiful, and then as the ice cube melts, it you end up with the lemon zest and the mint in the drink.
It sounds amazing, and I know you actually sent me a photograph, and it looks amazing as well, I have to say. Is that actually in the book?
Yes, that's in the book. He was actually, Juan Altamirez was the first person to publish recipes for granizadas, which were medicinal drinks originally. The monks and friars owned most of Spain's ice wells. they had the right to harvest snow and ice. And sometimes they sold this to town halls, as they did in Madrid, from El Escorial, and sometimes they kept it for their own use. And Juan Altamirez was cooking at quite an isolated friary, so he obviously had a lot around to use. Yeah. Well, and it's delicious. It's so different from what we buy commercially because of the cane sugar and the lemon zest.
Yeah, it looks very refreshing from the photograph, yeah. Well, the book is called New Art of Cookery, A Spanish Friar's Kitchen Notebook by Juan Altamirez, but it's actually now by Vicky Haywood, and it's out now. Now, Vicky, do you have a website as well?
Yes, I do have a website. What I would recommend for buying the book is going to the smaller sites like Book Depository and Wordery, because Amazon has been running out of stock.
Oh, I say.
Yeah, sometimes it's available and sometimes they run short and you have to wait a few weeks, but Book Depository and Wordery usually have it. And I do have a website in English and in Spanish, because the book will be coming out in Spanish. So it is the title of the book, www.newartofcookery.com.
Well, it's been fascinating. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll get on the website and buy the book right now. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
This is Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain.
More and more British expats are using a VPN to watch UK TV online from their homes in Spain. Here at My Expat Network, we understand the need for a low-cost, simple solution to watch all of your favourite TV from home. Our plans start from just £4 a month. No dish, no digital box, and no setup fee. And you can be ready to view in just 5 minutes. Join now using promo code VPN to enter this month's free draw. That's myexpatnetwork.com. You could win an iPad.
With so much uncertainty over Brexit, how can I separate fact from fiction?
Talk to the people who know. Levin's Franks are closely following Brexit negotiations so we can make sense of the noise and keep you informed of the implications. You may want to take action now under known rules rather than wait to see what happens and risk missing opportunities. Contact your local Blevins Franks office to arrange a meeting. Visit blevinsfranks.com. You can also sign up for our e-newsletters and keep an eye on the Brexit page on our website.
With the largest selection of Waitrose own brands, plus thousands of the UK's biggest names in food and drink, visit Eroski in Gibraltar and spoil yourself stocking up on foods you know and love. Eroski is opposite the Gibraltar Airport Terminal, just a 2-minute walk over the frontier. Open 8 a.m. till 10 p.m. every day with free parking. So if you're looking for Waitrose products, visit Eroski Gibraltar today.
Have mobility problems or difficulty walking? At Mobility Banous, we can help. We have a wide range of foldable electric scooters.